Our goal on this episode is to help you build wealth. Jen Reed is an expert in the financial field who came from the Fortune 500 world and is here to help you and coach you so that you have the money mindset to live your authentic rich life, which means something different for everyone. But let's be real, we're not our parents, we're not boomers, and we're not looking to live the white picket fence life and have that be sufficient. We want freedom. We want to be able to pick up and leave when we want. We want to be able to work where we want, when we want. And we want to be able to have as many opportunities as we can as millennials and Gen Zers. Stay tuned for this episode as Jen gets into her background and how she got where she is today and shares the money tips and tricks for you to live your true fullest life and to budget, to save, to get debt free. All the things we talk about are so important to me, and I am all about wealth building. So stay tuned for this episode as I found it so inspiring, and I think you will as well. Welcome back, everyone, to the Lily Grace Lifestyle Podcast. Today I have Jen Reed on, and I'm so excited. And today we're talking about money. So we're going to dive deep into it. But the first question I start out with is, what defines your lifestyle?
I think it's defined by freedom.
Where in your childhood would you say you either didn't feel free or where you felt free and then that carried out throughout your life?
Yeah, I think watching my parents a little bit of, and like always like watching them kind of have a lack of freedom made me realize how much I desired it and wanted it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how in your daily life would you say you practice freedom or find freedom?
This has been very easy by starting my own business, being able to take on clients that I want to take on, design my schedule the way I want to design it, book meetings when I want them, block them off, travel.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you came from the Fortune 500 world, is that correct?
Yes.
So can you tell us that story and how you got there?
Yeah, that was a lack of freedom. was in corporate, personal finance. There was a lot of things that I wanted to learn in the personal financial world, and the Fortune 500 company that I worked under, New York Life, they're a great company to learn a lot of products and kind of what not to do's. But there was a lot of restriction, and there was a lot of things that I didn't love about it, and it didn't give me the flexibility to do.
And why do you think your personality needs to have kind of make your own rule book per se? Because I feel like a lot of people go to college and then they get the big job at a Fortune 500 company, and that's like it. That's like what you're expected to do, is follow that corporate path. But I guess what made you switch and want to leave?
I have been diagnosed with ADHD, and I think that was a lot of it. But I also think that I have like a creative background and mindset and desire to kind of wear all different types of hats too. And in that space, there was a marketing team, and they were the ones that did the marketing. And there was, you know, the business development team, and they did all the business development. So I couldn't be doing multiple things at a lot because there were very specific people put in those roles to do exactly that.
Right. Actually, that's a good point, because also me too, being a creative entrepreneur like yourself, I like being in a tiny company with three of us because I'm able to touch HR, IT, marketing, business development, sales, all the things that I love to do. And we're able to play on all of our facets of our skill set. And maybe in a big company, they use you as like a cog in the machine. It's like your little piece of the big picture. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And what would you say the biggest takeaway was from that time in the corporate world?
I think I was able to learn and grow some of the skill sets that I need in order to build my business. And I was able to also lean on people that have been in there for 30, 40, 50 years, which was great. And they thrived in that environment. And I was able to bring them into client meetings or bring them in as a resource or a tool to say, hey, I've never experienced this kind of tax situation, or I've never experienced this kind of situation where, you know, there's a prenup involved or things like that. But if I bring on, you know, somebody that's already experienced that, we could quickly get through situations, which was really helpful.
Mm. So you got a lot of experience and just time to learn from other people and have mentors, which is so cool. And what is the difference, would you say, between living a rich life versus getting rich? I think this is going to be a big topic of conversation in this podcast episode, because probably with social media and just keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with the Kardashians, everyone wants to be rich. But what's the difference between that and then living your own rich life?
Society defines rich as, like you said, like keeping up with the Joneses, the fancy things, the materials, like what you see on people's posts or stories, right? It's like this highlight reel of vacations and private jets and going to the Super Bowl or, you know, concerts. Like those are the things that people start to associate like rich with, right? Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that I've really learned is like dialing into what brings you joy, what you value in life, and your personal goals versus what society tells you is rich, right? Like Taylor Swift's music is great, but I don't love concerts. So same. I don't want to be spending $6,000 going to Taylor Swift's concert because that's what society tells me is going to like define me as rich or wealthy.
Right. That makes sense. And I think about how I'm technically Gen Z or a millennial versus our parents being boomers define their American dream and their rich quote unquote lifestyle. Like I feel like for our parents, correct me if I'm wrong, it was kind of the typical 50s or maybe their parents 50s household where you bought a house, you had a car, you had two kids, a dog, and that was like the rich American life with the white picket fence. And if you had a stable job, that was great. And now it's maybe shifted where millennials and young people really want freedom, like you were saying, to travel, to just pick up and leave when they want to have remote work and all of these things. So how do you think that that has affected people's financial states?
Well, I think our parents lived in a different time period as well, where they could live off of a one income household and still do a lot, right?
Yeah, that's true. That was my family growing up.
Yeah, mine too.
Interesting.
It's a lot easier to buy the house, be content with the house and the two kids, and just kind of live your lifestyle in the neighborhood and let your kids play in the dirt and that kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that actually is less expensive overall.
Interesting. True.
But today we add in, you know, the student loans and traveling and having two kids and buying, you know, the nicest house on the block and also buying a Range Rover, whatever. It's like getting like the best of the best in everything, and it almost becomes like more financially stressful for our generation because we're seeing like one person do one thing, but we're adding it all up of like, I need to do whatever it is that everybody's doing. Everyone. And put it in and lump it all together.
Yeah. And to go back to your childhood, so you grew up with a one income household as well.
Yeah. And so my mom owned a retail like shop on the side. So we would go with her to the store, but that was more of like a hobby for her. It wasn't an income producing business. And then my dad was the only provider.
Yeah. And I grew up that way too. And I wonder this sometimes because you're very driven too. Like I think sometimes seeing my mom not work made me want to work way before she adopted me and my sister of 16 years being an education teacher. And not until I grew up and kind of realized how impactful that was to me and my development and my growth and how appreciative I am of that now, I didn't really see why that was the case. And I wanted to be like my dad. I wanted to have my own business. I'm an entrepreneur and I'm doing all those things. But I'm almost playing the opposite role because I had that. But now looking back, I'm like, eventually maybe I do want to be a stay-at-home mom because this is a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and I think it allowed us to also kind of like explore what we were good at,
yeah,
too. And I think that it does come in with the creativity, right? Of like, I like wearing multiple hats. So
yeah,
growing up, I was allowed to do that and kind of switch on a dime. Like if I was done playing outside, I could come in because I was on no one else's schedule.
Right. Huh. That's so interesting. And we had maybe a lot of quote unquote freedoms that maybe are friends didn't, whose moms work, because my mom could just drive me where I wanted to go when I went to go. That sounds so spoiled, but it's true.
Yeah.
Versus friends who need to, like, wait for their older sister, or, like, wait for their grandmother to get home or something like that. But I never really thought about it that way. That's interesting. But then on the other hand, my mom was so strict on certain things. I did not have a lot of freedom in other areas of my life.
Yeah. This is kind of off topic, but I was actually having a conversation with my sister. Like, a lot of stay-at-home moms actually have, like, very entrepreneurial spirits. Like, think about how they have to operate the household.
And, you're right.
Like, generate, like, meals and come up with a plan and have schedules, yeah, and operate everything else that's going on. Like, I think we probably took a lot more from our, yeah, moms and the entrepreneurial spirit.
You're so right. And looking over there, I have so many books and calendars and lists and notes. And it's crazy. And I used to, like, look at my mom doing that. She had her calendars, her lists, her piles of notes. And she used to be a school teacher. So she had, like, little charts for us and, like, all the things. But it's like, I wonder how I got that. But it's, like, from her. But that's so true. Because you kind of, to be a mom, I feel like you have to be the most creative you can be. Because it's, like, a big job.
Yeah. And you're managing people and personalities.
Yes. Yes. It's crazy. And are you and your sister the only two?
We have there's a brother after my sister. Nice. Yeah.
So you're the oldest?
Yep.
Me too. I could see that. But it's interesting. I was just listening to a podcast today saying the oldest siblings, now don't take this with a grain of salt, but there is a lot of research on this, that the oldest siblings have a higher IQ, but the younger siblings take bigger risks because we were probably our parents, per se, guinea pig and, you know, yeah, trying to follow the right path and stuff. But by the time they get to the younger kid, they're like, all right, I've done this before, so they can just do whatever. But it's interesting.
Yeah. I would say that's probably exactly where my brother and I are. He's the one that's like, oh, I'll live life and figure it out on my own terms. And I'm like, okay, we need structure.
Yeah,
we need,
yes,
we need a plan.
I like plans.
I'm going to be smart about this.
It's good to have a balance, though. Yeah. And do you mind me asking, too, with your partner, like, is he kind of more like your brother? Is he kind of more like you in the sense of, like, planning and versus not? Because finances, like, when you are with someone, it overlaps with them.
He is more of a free spirit.
I love that.
I think that even just being a male, he has, you know, that idea of, like, I get to do what I want. And
yeah,
he is the oldest sibling, too. So I think he has a little bit of structure, too, where he likes, nice, a plan and wants to know what's going on.
Yeah. Okay, this is cool. I like this. I love talking about money. I've told my guests this before, or my audience this before. It's so fascinating to me, and you can see all the books I've read behind me, like Think and Grow Rich, Smart Woman Finish Rich, book I Will Teach You to Be Rich, all these rich words. But it is true about kind of seeing everyone else's life and trying to meet up to those standards versus our parents and us growing up. We kind of had our neighborhoods, or we didn't have such a large world to look at because we didn't have social media.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. And how would you define your own rich life?
I think there's a balance between the freedom piece of, like, wanting to be able to do what I want to do. But also, I really gravitate towards security as well.
I like that.
I think that was even a big thing when I took the leap from corporate to owning my own business. Like,
yeah,
there was a lot of contingencies in place to make sure that it was gonna work, and I had, you know, an emergency cushion,
yeah,
upon an emergency cushion. So I do think that plays into my rich life, but I think it's evolved over time to actually learn how to enjoy money a little bit and
I like
enjoy
that.
How to spend it, because I think growing up I was taught of how to save it and kind of hold,
yeah,
on to it.
Yeah.
And I think that enforces a scarcity mindset, mm-hmm, over the abundance. And I think you have to have a nice balance of the two in order to be able to grow and live rich.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yes, yes. Because I know in the book with Ramit Sethi, you've read that book too, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about this. He said, live your own rich life, whether that be buying a Starbucks every day. Maybe that's how you live your rich life. Or maybe it's like you save money and then you go on a trip. All these different things that people can do. And I thought it was interesting you said having security, because I am very similar. And I actually, at my found meeting, we took this quiz called the top 10 relational needs, and I'll send it to you if you want. But it was fascinating because some of them I was like, oh, I could see that, but others I was like, whoa. And one of them was security, and for me that's like a 9, and 10 is the top, and 0 is, and then it goes negative, but 0 is nothing. But security and comfort were really high up there. Yeah. And maybe that's because we were older siblings and had to kind of watch over our siblings. Maybe that's just because of our personalities and just being safe. And like, I was also taught to save. My dad was the cash king, meaning like he didn't have any credit cards or anything really growing up. He always had cash. I always had cash until college, until I needed a debit card. So that's just very interesting about security.
I don't know about you, but I had a lot of those voices in my head of my parents being like, save, save, save.
Yeah.
You can't have a credit card. You can't get into credit card debt. But I then never had the balance of actually understanding, like, well, how do I spend properly, right? Like, so then it was like this teeter of like, okay, now I had some freedom to spend, and I got into credit card debt because I didn't know how to manage it.
Right. Yeah, I feel like for me, eventually, I just was like, no debt until I had student loans and paid those off as quick as I could under 2 years, which is so exciting because of discipline, which we can get into that too. But I think for me, I just realized, well, for anyone, whatever you value is how you spend your time and your money, whether you know it or not. And I always say this because if we were to look at their whole bank statement of someone's life, you could literally point out, like, oh, they really care about, like, I don't know, going out to eat or traveling, or, oh, they drink a lot, or, like, all these different things is how we spend our money and our time is what you value.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot to be said about how confident and secure you are in yourself, and how you can be influenced to spend money, because I also do see people that don't value going out to eat but value status or social interactions, and so they end up spending their money on like going out and being with people because they don't want to miss out on something, or they want to be seen as having status or having wealth, even though they may not want to prioritize spending money in that area.
That's so true. And I always say, take all this Instagram stuff and these pictures with a grain of salt, because so many people are in so much debt. Like, my dad and I always talk about this. Like, people are poor at a different level. Have you ever heard that term? I'm sure. Where, you know, they have the McMansion, they have the Range Rover, they have all the things we're talking about, but they have millions, thousands of dollars of debt that you don't see. So you're right, the incentive or the motive behind your spending really matters.
Yeah. I'll also point out there's like the emotional debt too, right? Like, you can have all the things and still have the millions of dollars in the bank, but that doesn't mean they're happy either. So
yeah,
like, finding the joy in spending too.
Yeah.
I think so many people are trying to buy the next thing or get the next level of whatever material thing it is. And it's like, okay, when I hit that level, then I'll be happy, or then I'll have that joy. And I think it's finding some of that contentment in the journey. And if you're not happy now, you're not going to be happy when.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. That is so important, I think, to talk about, because even I've had my own experiences where I'm like, once I make this amount of money or once I have this much in the bank, I'm going to be happy automatically. But I'm like, I have made the most money I've ever had, and I felt the most empty. And I was like, all right, there clearly has to be some work done here. And this was a couple years ago. But it does come back to the internal and the emotional kind of intelligence and security that you have within yourself, which is so interesting. And there are so many people just struggling with their money, probably, especially millennials. For once, I think it's a statistic that says we're making less than our parents did. Can you talk to that point and why? were quote unquote struggling.
Well, yeah. So I think, I don't know if you've seen the same statistic, but it's like $100,000 for what our parents is making actually means we need to be making almost $260,000 to equate to what they were making at that like 30 to 40 mark. Wow. And honestly, like $260,000 right now is an extremely healthy salary. There's not a lot of recent grads or even, you know, 10 years out of school making $260,000. Like that's a seasoned career right there making $260,000.
Right.
But that's kind of what it feels like it takes in order to keep up with the Joneses, right? Yeah. Like in order to travel and eat out and get the house and do all the things, it takes a lot of money to get there. And I think too many people are saying yes to things that they can't afford. And so it's getting wrapped up in some credit card debt sometimes, or even just not knowing where your money's going. It's like you feel like it's there, but it's actually allocated towards something else, and you just spent it on the new pair of boots or the purse or the trip or whatever
which
it is.
We all do. We all do.
Yeah.
And what would you tell someone who is saying yes to things that deep down they know they probably shouldn't be saying yes to? And how do you track your money?
So I think one of the biggest things that has helped me personally is budgeting. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say the word, but it is the word that defines what it is that you're doing. You're understanding your income and your track, like you understand your expenses. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that you can dial in to understand what that looks like for you and be proactive around your money versus reactive, that's what's going to set you up for success, so that you can say things like, hey, that's actually not a priority of mine. Or I didn't budget for that this month.
Yeah.
And I think we also need to just reframe what the word budget means.
Yes.
Because it really is. It's like a profit and loss statement, right? Like money in, money out. That's exactly what a budget is. It's just saying, I make this much, I spend this much. This is how much I either overspent or saved. And too many people are like, oh, you're poor if you're on a budget, or it's restrictive if you're on a budget, or, you know, they're boring because they're on a budget. Like, there's so many things that we say to ourselves, like, I won't be liked if I tell people I'm on a budget. And I think that's, it's hard, like, to get over that, you know, the urban dictionary, right, of, like, what budget means, but it's a good thing and it's helpful and it's something that's given me freedom, and I think it's given a lot of my clients freedom to actually do really cool things.
Yeah. I like that. And I use Life Budget is the app to track all of my spending, and maybe you don't call it a budget. Maybe you just say you're tracking your income, like however you want to say it, because there is like a weird stigma, like, oh, I'm on a budget, you must be poor. Like it's this weird thing that maybe we grew up with, but it's changing, I feel like. And it's interesting too how you help people. You've helped so many people. You have so many clients. When they come to you, would you say they have any awareness of where their money's going? Or is that where you step in and you're like, girl, we gotta fix this?
That is usually the first 2 to 3 months of working with someone. Wow. It's like, hey, we're just collecting data. Like, all I want to do is set an expectation of what we think the plan is and start to see what's actually happening. And just let's see what happens. And it's like bringing that clarity and light to what's going on in their bank accounts, because we have checking accounts, we have multiple credit cards, we have money being transferred from Venmo. There's so many moving parts that you can't just say like, okay, I'm gonna balance my checkbook and like know where my balance should be at. Like there's too many pieces, so we have to have this one-stop place where we can look at everything and actually manage it and see it.
Yeah, and you're right about the Venmo. I feel like for me, the credit card and the Venmo thing trips me up the most, in a sense, because there's money everywhere. It's so confusing. And I used to only have like one bank account growing up, and then all of a sudden I had a business bank account, and then this other bank account, and then a savings account, and then a Roth IRA, then a simple IRA, and then Venmo, and then two credit cards. So it's like this whole thing of like, there's money everywhere, per
and
se.
Being transferred and then accounted for and not accounted for.
Yes, yes. It's confusing. Whereas back in the day, our parents just had probably one savings account and then cash. And they, I don't know, like my dad only had a business credit card. But
yeah,
how do you take all that? You say you just met me as a new client and you're kind of diving in deep to the records of the personal kind of sensitive areas in my life. How do you like really get a grip on all of that? Because it's overwhelming.
Yeah. I start with pen and paper.
I love it. Girl after my own heart.
I literally just say, like, I want you to write, like, the messiest, probably not accurate budget on pen and paper. We'll start to list out, like, housing expenses, food, auto, like, all those things. And I just say, just, like, brain dump that for me. Like, I want you to just think about what you expect to happen and what should the numbers look like.
Mm.
Right? Because the numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
So if a client comes in and they're like, okay, I make $10,000 a month, I have $5,000 in expenses, great. There should be $5,000 left over.
Yeah.
If that's not accurate or we don't have a huge savings, there's a leak somewhere. There's a leak somewhere. And we need to bring light to that. Like, all right, well, where are you spending your money? What's going on? Let's talk about that and let's actually start to pull that all together.
And would you say working with personal clients versus more corporate or business clients that you have, which one's more emotional? Because finances are so emotional. I didn't realize this until starting a business and kind of like working with other people, seeing the insides of other people's business. Like for me, it's always been very black or white. I've kind of always known what I'm doing, but for most people, right, it is emotional. We're going to take a little intermission and I'm going to talk about what's been happening behind the scenes. Each month, I'm really focusing on bringing quality guests and quality content to you. I really want to show exclusive BTS about what's been happening in my life, in my friendships, with my travels, so you can get a little inside scoop. On the vlogs on YouTube that I'm launching every single month, I'm going to show the Lily Grace lifestyle, the real deal. So stay tuned for that and go check it out on YouTube at Lily Grace Lifestyle. I'm so excited to get back into this amazing show and thank you so much for supporting me along the way. Without you, I would not be where I am. And if you subscribe, like, and follow, I promise to bring you bigger guests and better content as we move forward. Stay tuned for the rest of this show.
It's 90% emotions and what's going on personally, and then 10% numbers.
Wow.
Because like I said, the numbers don't lie. If you put if you say we're going to save $2,000 a month, that sounds easy enough.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
Why aren't we doing it? Right.
Right,
like,
right.
There's something deeper usually going on.
Yes.
Whether it's childhood.
Right.
You know, stories that you're telling yourself. It's, you know, random conversations you're having with yourself about.
Yeah.
I just spoke with a group of girls. And the biggest word they could come up with is, like, I spend money because I deserve to.
Interesting.
And there is a piece of it where, like, yeah, you do deserve to spend your money.
How old were they?
They were 35-ish.
Interesting.
So they all were like, I work hard, I deserve to spend my money. But it's like, you deserve to spend your money if you actually have planned for it and are proactive around that piece,
Huh, that's fascinating to me because I feel like the word deserve is also used in dating a lot. Some of the issues with men and women, or at least for straight couples, is like we're butting against each other like this. And as women, we deserve to have a 6-foot-tall man, someone who makes over 6 figures and drives a Mercedes-Benz. Like, on the flip side, I deserve to make this amount of money because this is what I'm worth. So I feel like a lot of your job is really just therapy, it sounds like.
It's much more financial therapy than it is financial planning.
You're like a serious coach, like a life coach, finance coach. But you're so right. It's like, this is the truth. The numbers are the truth, that 10%. But the 90% is like, all right, let's dig deep here and figure out what the deal is.
Yeah.
And how long would you say it usually takes you to, as you're working with a client, to realize kind of what the issue is and then how to implement new habits.
Yeah, so I think that was one of the biggest things where I was trying to be creative in the corporate world of saying, like, hey, I know what to do.
Right.
My client knows what to do, but they're not actually doing it.
Yeah.
And so we send them on their way and we say, hey, go take all this information, get through these homework items, and I'll see you in 6 months.
Oh, yep.
And that at that moment, most clients freeze. Like, it's just like, oh, you're telling me to go save X amount of dollars or set up this automatic transaction. It's like, that sounds great, but then there's something that they hit, like there's a wall that they hit, right? Whether it's like some sort of fear or, you know, maybe their parents lost a job when they were growing up, so then right. they don't want to do that because they want more in savings versus investments. Or there's just something that usually stops them from getting to the next level. And that's where I was like, all right, we need more accountability.
Yeah.
And so the hand-holding part with a lot of my clients is usually when I can get to that point where I'm like, okay, so like we're going to open this account and we're setting up the automatic transaction mm-hmm. and we're doing the things. And that's when usually kind of stuff starts to come out and they're like, well, what if? And then they start to ask all these questions. And
right.
then it's helping them and reassuring them that, you know, that's not going to happen. And here we have contingencies in place. And
okay,
and here's the plan so that you feel that safety and security as we make these bigger decisions. But that's when we're having these really big conversations around like, but what if I lose my job and all this money goes away?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if the stock market tanks and, like, where do I get my money, right?
Right?
Like, those are the things that are coming up for them that trip them up.
Interesting, yeah.
In the corporate, like, when I was working for larger firms,
mm-hmm.
that I couldn't be with them doing all the things.
Right, right. This is so fascinating to me. And are a lot of your clients, say, married or have kids? Like, what's kind of the profile of a client that you have?
Yeah, so I kind of have three, like, special, like, areas right now that I think
nice.
Really help each, like, segment. It's the couples, so
yep.
They're joining finances, they're combining finances, they're really dealing with two different styles of managing money, usually, like,
yes.
one's a spender, one's a saver, one likes quality, one likes quantity, right? Like,
yep.
there's bigger dynamics at play, and they kind of need a mediator in the middle.
So you're like, that's to help them.
Yeah, say like, hey, it's okay for him to spend this money on
yeah.
a fishing trip. And it's okay for you to go get your nails done. Like, there's a balance, right? The other is women business owners.
Mm-hmm.
I love working with business owners because I think there's so much room for growth and seeing the numbers and feeling confident and being the CFO within your business.
Yeah.
And I think too many times people get, I don't know if you've heard this, being in business for yourself, like somebody selling you something by saying, it's a write-off, it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Taking things and actually being able to say, like, nope, it's just a discount
yep.
on whatever service that is.
Yep.
Like, let's actually look at it from a profit and loss standpoint.
I like that.
And then single women mm-hmm. is the other one. I think there's this a beautiful thing that happens when, like, a woman is managing money on her own,
yes.
is investing, is saving, and feels absolutely like a rock star when
yeah.
she's got her money in order.
I love
that. Like, it is so cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love all those sectors. I fall into the latter two
yeah.
as of right now, and I'll be signing up with you eventually, like we talked about.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating to me of how you serve so many different types of people. And for the women who you work with, are a lot of them, you know, just getting out of school? Are they further along in their careers? Kind of where are they at in their life, would you say?
So it's an interesting question because I think it's just, like, this, like, overall, like, emotional feeling, not necessarily an age. It's like, hey, I am, like, ready to get my finances in order. Like, this is a part of my life
yeah.
where I want to feel good about.
Nice.
And for some people, that happens at 22. And for some, it happens at 45.
Right,
like,
right.
It just
you're
is,
right.
It, you need to be able to get to meet me at that level where you're like, mm-hmm. kind of like a fitness trainer, right? Like, yeah. I'm ready to get dialed in. I'm going to stop like goofing off with these apps or Planet Fitness or things that aren't actually serving me.
Sure.
I'm going to like really make my money work for me.
Mm, okay. I like that. I like that. And what would you say really helps you when a client is maybe reluctant at first? Because we're talking about all these things, and I think we're talking about it in a very easy way for people to understand, but sometimes this is a total foreign language to them. So how do you help that reluctance?
It's hard. I'm not gonna lie, because think there is a lot of resistance to talking about money because there's so much guilt and shame that's built up around it from a lot of childhood trauma, or you know, seeing other people or even feeling like other people around you are successful when you can't actually see what's actually going on in the background.
So true.
So I think it's just making people feel like it's a safe space to talk about money and to feel comfortable and confident with it. And that's been, I think, something that helps people feel excited about it and have fun with it and not feel so overwhelmed or so much resistance against it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's important. And it's very interesting because we're talking about all these things of finances and how we live our lives. Like, lifestyle kind of encompasses everything we're talking about.
For sure.
And what we see online and how we see people live their lives isn't always reality.
For example, like, there's times when I'm like, I know the numbers. Like, like, I understand, like, what that, like, if they're in a career, I'm like, I understand what they're probably making.
Right.
Their, you know, rent is too high, or, you know, they keep telling me they have student loans or a car loan or whatever, right? And then, you know, it's like the numbers don't work.
Yes, yes, that's what I was trying to say.
But then you don't know, like, maybe they got a large inheritance, or maybe, you know, they get a large bonus every year, or maybe they're not paying the student loan. Maybe it's a grandparent that's paying it, right?
Like,
there are so many unknown factors that people aren't seeing, and most people aren't sharing that with everybody.
Right.
Like, they're not saying, oh, I have a $4 million inheritance where I get a large check once a year, right? Like, that's not coming out of the woodwork.
Right.
People are also just as ashamed, usually, of being wealthy as they are of being poor.
That's a good point. And why do you think that is?
I think there are so many, like, negative conversations that happen around wealthy people. Like, wealthy people are greedy, wealthy people, you know, spend too much money, they should be giving back more. Like, those are conversations that are happening.
Right.
I mean, just think about, like, if you're thinking about getting rich or wealthy, like, how are people going to view you if you're spending more money?
Right. I feel like it depends who your circle is, too, which makes a big difference. And do you believe that, say, you know, the saying, the top five people surrounding you is kind of like where your life is going to go and where your wealth is going to end up?
Yeah. Well, and it's usually because, like, those are the people that you can kind of relate to financially. So it's, you're not going to go hang out with someone who can go spend $20,000 on a weekend vacation, right? Because you can't even comprehend that, right? Or it doesn't, it wouldn't fit even on your credit card, right? So you're going to stick with people who you can kind of keep up with.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. And what if you're accelerating or decelerating faster or slower than the people around you? Because there is some awkwardness when it's like, oh, I can't really afford that restaurant. Can we go somewhere else? Or, like, you know, those kind of social interactions where it gets a little awkward almost about the Venmo and about the, you know, all the things.
Yeah, I think you have to get comfortable with saying, like, it's not in your budget, or, you know, being able to say, like, what's our price range for this? Or do we have a budget for where we're going? Like, this is mine. Like, I have goals or I have priorities that I'm setting aside for.
Makes sense. And I totally respect people who say things like that. It's like, oh, no, I can't do this. Or you don't even have to say why. You can just say no. And it, like, knows a full sentence, too.
Yeah.
But I totally respect the boundaries, because for a while,
at least in my love life, I didn't really have boundaries. And I probably that fell over into my finances too. But understanding that people can say no and that you can say no very often is really nice. And the joy of missing out is a good thing now. And all of those things. And I think to your point of like understanding the numbers is what I was trying to get at before of like, because we understand the numbers, it gives us like a little insight. But then I like the point that you said about like you never know behind what's happening behind closed doors. Like it could be really good, really bad, or in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for people listening who are in a couple or about to move in together or about to get married, what are some tips and tricks you can give them when it comes to combining finances in a healthy manner?
Yeah. So I will say start on paper. Combine things on paper because it doesn't force you to like combine actual accounts, and it just lets you see things from a holistic like umbrella type view of like, all right, here are our joint expenses, here's, you know, one partner's expenses, here's the other partner's expenses, how do they compare, can we look at ratios of spending or free spending or debt that they're bringing to the table, then having great conversations just around like, how do you feel about debt, right?
Right.
Is debt something we're both open to? Is it something where, like, we want to immediately get rid of, right? Like, I think you and I both have, like, this averseness to debt,
to
right?
Debt,
like,
yeah.
I don't know what it was about it. Like, when I married my husband who had debt. I had no debt. And when we got married, it was like, I can't. It was like, we're, like, pausing everything else.
Yeah.
I can't have it in my life. It just creates this negative, like, weight in my stomach.
Right.
But he was totally okay with it,
oh,
right?
Good.
So, like,
worked out.
It was fine.
That's nice.
But I just put all my resources towards killing the debt.
Right.
But I think those are good conversations to have.
Interesting, yeah.
Because as you're going to take on maybe mortgages or kids or things like that, those are going to be bigger conversations that are going to be around savings and investing and debt.
Yeah, because the biggest cause of divorce is finances. So why not put it all on paper, like what you're saying, before you even get married, like before any of this is like solidified.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you suggest for people in a couple if they're trying to reach a goal? Say it is saving for a house or this big vacation or anything. Like how can you reach a goal together? Like say one person makes double the other person. How do you make it fair and just?
The hard part with money is it's never going to be fair. And I think that goes with roles just in life, right?
Yeah.
Like it's too hard to try and split up and be 50-50. I think you have to think of it as like a team. And come up with some like ideas and thoughts around, you know, what if one partner is making double or triple? What if one part, you know, like, those are the conversations I want couples to have in the beginning is, you know, is it a team or are we both individuals contributing to one, like the goal, or are we a team and doing everything together?
And talking about the stigma of women making more than their husbands, I've heard statistics and facts about how those marriages don't really find a lot of happiness, and there's kind of this ego thing with the man if the woman makes a lot more. How would you combat that, or do you agree with that? Like, what are your thoughts?
Hard question. I do think a man needs to have, like, something to work for. That's more of just like a personal, like I think they do really well off of like being a provider, and that doesn't have to necessarily be like providing, you know, triple or quadruple what the income is. But I think that if they feel like they're contributing to the household in some way, that's something that can help build up their, like build up the house and kind of build up the team together.
I like that, because whether it be their time or their energy or their capability of like being the handyman and fixing everything, but maybe not the quote unquote money coming in, like just being a participant in the team effort, it makes sense. Because nowadays women are more educated, making more money than men, buying houses before men, like we're thriving, which is a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing at all, but it creates this kind of weird teeter-totter that's kind of shifting which was pretty opposite compared to our parents. So it's just this interesting thing happening in society that we kind of have to deal with.
Yeah. I think that, like, contribution is a big word I hear a lot in couples, like, from both sides, whether who's making more or, like, I hear women say a lot, like, I don't feel like I'm contributing enough, but, you know, they're doing a lot of other things that you can't put a number on or a value to. And I think that's the same with a man, right? Like, you're dealing with a lot of different gender characteristics as well. But I think if you're both, if you both feel like you're contributing something to the house, it doesn't necessarily have to be a monetary number.
Yeah, I like that. That makes sense. And for our last category of women-owned businesses and business owners, future me / current me, and you too, what is one piece of advice that you would give to someone who owns a business and how to manage their finances?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is understanding your personal finances first, and then being able to develop a business plan that supports your personal finances. So if it's having a career and doing a side hustle to get you to that point so you can still live your life, then that's great. Understanding the cash flow in both personal and business is going to be an accelerator on both ends. I think there's too many people that don't take the time to sit down and be the CFO and understand everything that's going on.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And I always say to people, whether it be finding a job, finding a boyfriend, finding their finances, like, work backwards. What do you want your life to look like? What do you want your finances to look like? What do you want your love life to look like? And then work backwards in the sense of figuring out what you are doing, what you are valuing in order to get to that point. So I feel like a lot of what we're talking about is kind of leading to that point. And I feel like I've learned so much from you. So thank you so much for coming on today. And is there anything else that you wanted to share when it comes to finances or what you do for your business as you coach people through their finances?
There are a lot of people out there that are just looking to sell products. They're not really looking to help you. There's fees and expenses and commissions, which is why I think that it's so important that you understand it and, like, don't get into anything that you don't completely understand, and ask lots of questions. I think too many people are or I've heard so many times of, like, oh, they were a friend, or oh, they were a family, and I just trusted them to do what was best for me. And that's a hard thing to go back and say to your family, like, I trusted you to help me, and you put me in the wrong thing, or you didn't actually help me with my finances. So I think books, like you said, like I Will Teach You to Be Rich, Think and Grow Rich, like, those are great starter points. Unshakable by Tony Robbins, that's a great one to learn a little bit more about finances. But do your research and understand who you're working with and what you're looking to achieve.
Yeah, and do you mind sharing what makes your services different than others? Because I feel like that's what really sells what you do.
Yeah. So I am a personal financial management, investment education, and planning firm. So we are a flat fee. So to work with us, you don't need any assets, or there's no minimums in order to work with us. I don't charge fees or expenses, and there's no commission on anything. So you get the absolute best of the best of what is right for you and not based off of, like, I'm going to make money off of selling you something. So we're putting you essentially in the best products and giving you the best advice out there. And we're really looking to create long-term relationships with people where, you know, you want to work with us for 10, 20, 30 years because there's accountability and we understand what's going on in your life, and we're helping you manage the cash flow and savings.
Yeah. And long-term, you did this calculation, which blew my mind when it came to how much you save by going with your flat fee services versus with someone who is off commission. And I thought it was crazy because you can save millions of dollars long term if you're investing in your retirement funds, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's crazy that like a 1% asset under management could actually cut your portfolio by probably 30 to 40%.
Yeah. That's crazy. So yeah. It sounds so little, 1%. Oh, whatever.
Right. Yeah. So on average, we're saving our clients at least $1 million by working with us.
Yeah.
And some of our clients are saving 10, 15, 20 yeah. million dollars by paying a flat fee over the commission.
And crazy. Crazy.
Asset management structure. Yeah.
And that's over the long term. And that's why I think finance is so important and the impetus to living a healthy lifestyle, because it's the way you transfer energy throughout the world. And it's just so interesting and important to me. So thank you so much for coming on today. Yeah, I appreciated this. And how can people connect with you online or work with you?
Yeah, so Finances with Jen is our Instagram. Jen at baseplanning.co is email, and baseplanning.co is website. And there's links everywhere yes. to connect, to book a meeting, to get a consult. I offer consults for free because I think even just having the conversation and opening up just opens up a door that gives you some freedom to even just start.
Amazing. And a lot of my former podcast guests work with you, or a lot of my clients work with you, and I will eventually work with you too. So I'm so excited for this episode to launch. I feel like this is a conversation that's just very of the moment, and I so appreciate your time.
Yeah. Money's a resource. We get to use it and have fun with it.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Amazing.
Thank you so much for listening to this show. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button and leave a review. Your support means the world to me and enables me to bring on impactful guests each month. If you would like to find out more about this episode, please visit my website at www.lilygraceyork.com to see the show notes to find more resources there. If you would like to connect with these guests, please visit my Instagram at lilygrace_lifestyle, and there you can find more content from this episode. I hope you took away something positive from this interview, because I know I did. Stay tuned for more to come in season 5.